This is Jordan Seculo. Today on Jay Seculo Live, the Trump administration taking decisive action to stop government discrimination of religion and religious organizations.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Seculo Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Seculo.
This is very important, folks. At the ACLJ, we've been working on this issue for a long time. And we filed yesterday official comments with the Department of Labor in support of a Trump administration's Department of Labor new rule that will protect churches and religious organizations in their hiring practices. Let me just explain it to you. Churches and religious charities come under increasing pressure to disregard their faith when the left attempts to bury the sacred in red tape, and they're hampered in their ability to do the work that their faith dictates. A lot of that also is aid work, humanitarian work, not just the work of the church, the religious work, or of the religious school, but of the assisting in the local communities as well. I mean, oftentimes you see churches engage in community service, disaster relief, other charity work, and oftentimes if you do that kind of work, you are eligible to receive federal contracts and grants. The Constitution and federal law has been clear on this. It protects religious institutions, but there's a lot of confusion around this because faith-based organizations often feel like they have to make a false choice between like who they hire and if they can get that, if they can actually get that funding. So what this new rule does is remove the ambiguous of this rule, because what happened was these churches were having to decide, oh, is this going to get us in trouble? Is that going to get us in trouble? I just want to let you know, and this is very key. In just 1 week, we filed our own comments at the ACLJ yesterday, and that was out in our email. 72,000 of you in 1 week signed on to those comments to this proposed rule. That's what happens. These rules are proposed. They take a comment period, and then they are finalized. So it's now at the comment period has closed. 72,000 of you signed on to our comments to this rule in 1 week. But we also encouraged ACLJ members to file their own comments directly with the Department of Labor. And so we set this system up on our website at aclj.org so that you can file your own comments. And it's pretty awesome because 4,200 of you did that. Our comments alone account for 13% of the total comments the Department of Labor received on this proposed rule to protect churches and religious organizations from religious discrimination. And we detailed four reasons why this is so necessary. One, because it would address the ambiguity in the law. Two, religious organizations provide an essential and quantifiable positive net to society as a whole by promoting charity and civic virtues and good citizenship. These rights are already enshrined in the Constitution, and the proposed guidelines do not create new protections, but rather use the tried and true legal framework of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. No church, no religious organization should be forced to hire anyone who disagrees with the tenets of their faith. I mean, that's the bottom line. And by making that decision, they shouldn't then be disqualified from getting federal funds to do disaster relief that has nothing to do with the religious work that the church is doing or that the religious school is doing. But imagine a Christian school. Do they have to hire an atheist teacher? They shouldn't. But this rule is going to make that clear that the federal government is saying they don't. We're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We are 1 week away from the launch of my first book, The Next Red Wave. We talk about this kind of discrimination in the book and why you got to fight back, why it takes administrations like the Trump administration to do the right thing. Pre-order the book now at thenextredwave.com, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the hardcover, the ebook. We need you to pre-order it. It's very important. The Next Red Wave, pre-order today.
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Defending human life. Standing up for our good friend Israel. Working to uncover the deep state, the massive corruption in Washington. Battling to end the genocide of Christians in many parts of the world. And a firm commitment to back constitutional efforts to protect our country from radical Islamic terrorists. You can learn more about the mission and work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ, become a member, and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Again, you won't be hearing it forever, but my new book is out next Tuesday. And again, so you'll be hearing about it this week and next week, and that'll probably be about it for the next couple weeks. I'll be doing a lot of interviews as well. I'll be on Sean Hannity's television broadcast, his radio broadcast next week, Fox and Friends, Shannon Bream's show, I think Judge Jeanine's show, a number of places, Governor Huckabee's show as well, the 700 Club next week to talk about the next red wave, because this is the first really political book you'll find from any of us that also work with the American Center for Law and Justice. Also, two of the authors, me and one of my co-authors, Benjamin Sisney, were on the president's outside legal team involved in the Russia probe and again, the Mueller investigation. I think it's probably the first book out by anyone involved in that directly on behalf of the president. But this is a book, this is not an ACLJ book in the sense that it's just about issues, policies, and law. This is a book about winning elections. Now, we weave in the issues and policies and law because we believe that's why it's important to win elections. And it's a guidebook. So pre-order your copy of The Next Red Wave today, just a week out from the release date. And again, the more pre-orders that come in, and you can go to thenextredwave.com, the more pre-orders that come in means the more books that get printed, the more people that will get their hands on this book before the election. And that means, again, a better chance of the next red wave coming November 3rd in 2020. And boy, do we need it to get some things accomplished. But the Trump administration is doing a lot on its own. We talk about it a lot in this book, how President Trump, even with a divided Congress, has done so much for conservatives and those who are and for religious freedom as well on his own through executive power. And one of those actions, Than, is this Department of Labor, a proposed new rule that clarifies the hiring practices of religious organizations, churches, schools, employers. I mean, it goes through an entire list, which I can go through from our comments. But this new proposed rule that says you're not going to be barred from receiving federal funds if you do emergency work or other charitable work if you decide to hire people who are only agree with the tenets of your faith. And this is for all religious groups, not just Christians.
Yeah, absolutely correct, Jordan. Let me just take a step back and give our listeners some background and a refresher on this, because, Jordan, this rule, as you know, stems out of an executive order that President Trump issued in the early days of his administration, actually directing all of the agencies to take a look at the religious freedom statutes that existed and do a better job of implementing them robustly. The one that's going to be the most familiar to our listeners is probably the rule that came out of the Department of Health and Human Services on conscience protections, ensuring that medical professionals did not have to perform procedures that were objectionable to their religion. Well, this is the rule out of the Department of Labor implementing that directive from President Trump, Jordan. There have been statutory protections in the labor space, in the employment space, for decades. Probably the one that we are the most familiar with is the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, RFRA, but it is not always applied consistently. And this rule that the Department of Labor has put out attempts to really clarify an executive order that was first put forth several decades ago that ensures that religious employers, whether they be churches or charities or organizations, can hire people consistent with their own faith. I think probably a lot of people listening to this, Jordan, would be shocked that that is ever a consideration. But sure enough, there are plenty of examples of organizations who have declined to participate in partnerships with the federal government, particularly contracts, because they thought that their right to hire according to the tenets of their faith would be threatened. This rule would fix that, would clarify it. And Jordan, I just want to stress this again. It ties back to that very first directive that President Trump put out. We are seeing it go from agency to agency to agency, and the statutes that the Congress has put in place, this administration, Jordan, they are actually implementing them as Congress intended.
My daughter goes to a Christian school, preschool, and that it's affiliated with the church. The church also runs a number of charitable organizations throughout the city, feeding the poor, housing the poor, drug recovery programs. Many of those programs would be eligible for both federal and state funding. And that's what this is about. This proposed rule is saying, listen, that church, that school, and those organizations associated with it can decide to hire only people that share in the tenets of that faith group. And they can still apply for the funds that would be available to groups that would otherwise be not religiously affiliated. So you understand, it's not just about saying, no, we're not going to hire an atheist teacher at a Christian school. It's about saying, going further. The Trump administration is going further, Harry. They're saying, let's go to Harry Hutchinson. They're saying, if you go to, for instance, the soup kitchen that the church runs, that even those who are employed there, if there's people that are not just volunteers, but also maybe an employee who keeps it all running, that person too, if the church so decides, can have to share the tenets of the church's faith.
I think you're correct. I think the new rule is precisely about freedom and liberty under the law in full compliance with the First Amendment, including the Free Exercise Clause and the Establishment Clause. Too often, religious organizations, religious corporations, they have refrained from participating in government programs for which they are eligible because they are afraid that their participation will lead to a regulatory fight with the administrative state. And since Executive Order 11246 was issued by Lyndon Johnson more than four decades ago, authority to implement this executive order has now been consolidated within the Department of Labor. And since that authority has been granted to the Department of Labor, as the Trump administration correctly notes in its filing with respect to the new rule, the Supreme Court has issued a plethora of decisions, including decisions suggesting that the government violates the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment when it makes decisions based on hostility to religion or to a religious viewpoint. The government violates the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment when it conditions a generally available public benefit on an entity giving up its religious character. The government violates, for instance, the Restoration Act, Religious Freedom Restoration Act, when the government basically says, for instance, in the Burwell versus Hobby Lobby case, that a for-profit, closely held corporation violates a provision of Obamacare. And then in Hosanna Tabor, the Supreme Court unanimously upheld a ministerial exception grounded in the Establishment and Free Exercise Clauses. So essentially, the Department of Labor is trying to bring up-to-date Executive Order 211246 and make sure that religious organizations are uninhibited in their participation in federal contracting.
We're going to get into more of the specifics of this, too. But I do want to underscore, now that Than is joining us, just the outpouring of support for this that we saw from our membership. 72,000 of you signed on to our comment. I've got our comment. This is our comment that we filed with the Department of Labor. So 72,000 of you signed on to this comment. But another 4,300 of you used our ACLJ system that we have set up, and this all happened in 1 week, to file your own comments. That made up 13% of all of the comments filed on this proposed rule came from ACLJ supporters. So I thank you for utilizing the tools we provide. I thank our donors who allow us to provide those electronic tools so that people can submit their own comments as well. And Than, it goes back to something we talk about in the next red wave, which is this critical First Amendment right that often gets overlooked. You know, we talk about freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of the press, but we also, and we oftentimes forget, and I guess if you read it into context, this would be important, that Congress shall make no law abridging the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. And in a way, by engaging in these public comment periods where you're allowed to make these public comments, that is exactly what people are doing. Sometimes we petition Congress. Other times we petition the federal government and they say, tell us what you think. But people have actually got to do it. They've got to take the action. And we had 72,000 people sign on to ours and 4,300 other people take their own action. I think that's great grassroots activity in just 1 week.
Jordan, this was what the founders envisioned when they wrote those words. And we are trying to provide the process for our members to petition the government for that very purpose. Look, they convinced the Congress to get the statute right, Jordan, but for decades, the administrations have not gotten it correct. We can help you advocate to the administration as well in a couple of different ways, and we'll continue to do it.
All right, folks, when we come back, we're going to continue to take more of your phone calls and comments, 1-800-684-3110, and get into more of the specifics of this. Get your copy. Pre-order now. The Next Red Wave. TheNextRedWave.com.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Defending human life, standing up for our good friend Israel, working to uncover the deep state, the massive corruption in Washington, battling to end the genocide of Christians in many parts of the world, and a firm commitment to back constitutional efforts to protect our country from radical Islamic terrorists. You can learn more about the mission and work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ. Become a member and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. The Trump administration taking action to prevent religious organizations, charities, employers from government discrimination. By the way, this is not just Christian. This is all religious groups. But oftentimes we see this focused on Christian charities. They're some of the largest in Christian organizations and Christian schools because they're some of the largest. Let me read to you from the comment that we have filed that 72,000 of you joined on to. The proposal by the Department of Labor will clarify that religious organizations can make employment decisions that are consistent with its religious tenets without being sanctioned by the federal government. The rule states that the religious exemption should, in fact, be construed to provide the broadest protections for religious freedom and exercise that are grounded in the Constitution and current laws, such as the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. This proposed regulatory change makes clear that the Executive Order 11246, religious exemption, so that was the Civil Rights Act and the religious exemption to that, covers not just churches, but employers that are organized for a religious purpose. That would be, again, like organizations like the ACLJ, organizations, religious charities, religious, again, think about all the different Catholic charities, religious schools. The list goes on and on and on. So it's very broad. And to those who hold themselves out to the public as carrying out a religious purpose and engage in the exercise of religion consistent with and in furtherance of a religious purpose, and that those individuals can still be eligible for federal funds when it's appropriate, like when they are involved in disaster relief, when they are involved in community outreach programs, helping the poor, helping the needy, whether it's in the community, whether it is disaster relief domestically or abroad, if there are federal or state funds available, that they should be able to at least apply, and they shouldn't be disqualified immediately just because they happen to be religious. And oftentimes that's how these religious organizations feel. That's what this is about correcting. And I want to go to Andy on this because Andy, for many years, a lot of these organizations felt like we've got to choose between just doing this all on our own. And we don't want to ask the federal government for anything, any kind of reimbursement, even though they have been eligible to receive sometimes significant funds to help with their aid work.
This will eliminate their apprehension and their fear that they can't do that. Jordan, I'm a historian, as you know, and I like to take the long view. Religious organizations provide clear and long-lasting benefits to society, and we've got to make sure that those religious organizations are able to receive the necessary federal contracts to remain viable. And from a historical perspective, and I think that's important, just to step back for just a minute, religious organizations and nonprofits have been providing to America for generations. We provide services to those organizations within our national welfare system, healthcare, social work, disaster relief, education, and charitable giving. And I think it's important to note something that is important today, September 17. Today is September 17. 223 years ago today, in his farewell address, George Washington talked about the importance of religion in our society and how it has to be protected. He said this: "Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. In vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness, these firmest props of the duties of men and citizens." And then the most unlikely, in my view, person said the following thing during his administration. The principle of religious liberty is an inalienable right that is enshrined in our Constitution. And he said, this person, and I'm not going to say who he is until I finish saying what he said, and I saw that local churches often did more good for a community than a government program ever could. So I know how important that work, the work of those faith-based organizations do, and how much impact they can have in their communities. That was said by Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to note that the importance of religiosity, the strongest and most consistent predictor of a wide range of measures of civic involvement, is being protected by this rule, which we have commented on favorably and which we hope goes into effect.
Yeah, we talk about it too in the next red wave. We talk about how at the state level we've seen, even at the very, like at the city council level, these provisions put in place that are so obvious on their face to prevent Bible studies from taking place in people's homes. So to say you can't have too many people at your dwelling at this period of time, or cars. And again, when you get down to it, and we write about it, and we had actually one of the co-authors of this book challenged it at the city council and went to the city council, and the city council ultimately folded because it was found that it did have a religious purpose behind it. They were trying to prevent these religious groups from meeting in people's private homes. We see this all the time also with churches trying to buy or expand on property, and governments coming in and saying no. And you know why they do that? Do you know why they discriminate against churches? Even though Andy said all those nice things that Barack Obama said about what churches and charities do, they are tax exempt, which means a lot of times, whether it's the federal government or state governments or local governments, because they are tax exempt, Harry, they have an animus towards allowing them to expand or purchase more property because they're not paying oftentimes the real estate tax, the property tax, the sales tax, because they are completely exempt from taxes.
I think that is correct. And the Supreme Court recently said that hostility toward religion cannot be a basis for decision making. And so I think it's very, very important that the Department of Labor essentially expand and clarify the meaning of Title VII with respect to government contracting. And basically, this rule precludes government bureaucrats from denying the participation of religious organizations who actually believe in their creed and seek to enforce their beliefs. So I think this is a clear and unmistakable step forward with respect to freedom and liberty within the meaning of the Free Exercise Clause of the Constitution, and it does not violate the Establishment Clause of the Constitution. So I think most religious scholars would agree that hostility cannot be a basis for adverse discrimination against a religious organization.
I want to take a lot of your phone calls in the second half hour of the broadcast. 1-800-684-3110. There will be legal challenges to this rule. It will go into effect. There will be legal challenges. And imagine this. The legal challenge will say, no, that Christian school, preschool that my daughter goes to, they can't say no to an atheist teacher, because even though that atheist teacher disagrees with teaching her about prayer and the Bible stories, they're going to say that. They're going to argue that in court. We've got to be ready to fight back. Call, we want to have you on the air, 1-800-684-3110, and pre-order The Next Red Wave, out next week.
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Become a member and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org.
I'm talking about freedom. Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
So we're going to start taking your phone calls right away, 1-800-684-3110. The Trump administration stopping government discrimination of religion. Yes, this is real. In 2019, it is something that has to be addressed because of the federal bureaucracy, those deep state bureaucrats who like to discriminate against religious groups and have animosity towards religious groups, and especially towards Christian groups. I will say that, though this rule will protect all religious groups, not just singling out Christians, but all the Jewish charities, Muslim charities, Hindu charities, Buddhist charities, everyone will have the same religious protections for their organizations, for their institutions, for whether they are set up as a church, an educational or religious organization, whether they run other nonprofits that are religiously affiliated. Again, they will get these protections. And folks, 72,000 of you signed on to our comment to this proposed rule. That's how this works in the federal government. And then an additional 4,300 of you used our ACLJ electronic system to submit your own comment, took the time, that extra step. And because of that, ACLJ comments from ACLJ and our members represented 13% of all of the comments that came in on this proposed rule. That's from the entire country. ACLJ members represent 13% of the proposed comments. See, we're taking advantage of the constitutional guarantees to petition our government and to, again, comment when the government says you can comment, to actually do so and to take action on that and to document it and to provide it to you and to give you an opportunity to comment as well. It is part of our duty as Americans when the government is acting this way. We talk about it in the next red wave because, again, it goes past for victory and to win in 2020. It goes past just casting your vote. Yes, you have faith, but let's remember, in our system of government, we're blessed, right? We get to elect our leaders. We don't have kings and queens. We have to go and vote. And I think that our leaders are a direct reflection, and the policies they implement are a direct reflection of us. So it's a sacred duty to vote. And this is a great example of what we talk about in the Next Red Wave. And you can, again, the book is out next Tuesday. Pre-order it now. TheNextRedWave.com has got all the places you can do the hardback. You can do the ebook, audiobook. Again, TheNextRedWave.com. But this is a perfect example of that, where this administration is doing the right thing by protecting religious organizations from government discrimination. And it's because people voted to get an administration in place that would actually take these steps. I want to go right to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We will address, actually, let's wait till we get back to the next break, because I want to update people on Israel. Israelis are voting right now. We will not know while we're on the air live today. Some of you get our broadcast later in the day. The polls close in Israel at 10 p.m. their time. That is 3 p.m. Eastern time. And then the numbers will come out. Now, remember, in Israel, it's not going to be like someone, it's not like two candidates and someone's going to get 50%, 50.1% of the vote, and that's it. You vote for the party. Whoever gets the most votes then usually gets to determine for a month if they can put together a governing coalition inside the Knesset. The big fight is between Prime Minister Netanyahu's Likud party and Benny Gantz's Blue and White party. Pretty similar on the issues, but different personalities. So we will see, again, very early today, likely how Israelis voted and how things will turn out. And again, so follow that news closely as well on our social media, places like twitter.com/Jordan Sekulow, my Facebook page, facebook.com/Jordan Sekulow ACLJ. I'll keep you updated on those Israeli elections results as we get definitive results from the election. And remember, pre-order your copy of The Next Red Wave today. The book releases in exactly 1 week. I'd appreciate you doing it so much. We put a lot of work into this book, and we think you'll love it.
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Defending human life. Standing up for our good friend Israel. Working to uncover the deep state, the massive corruption in Washington. Battling to end the genocide of Christians in many parts of the world. And a firm commitment to back constitutional efforts to protect our country from radical Islamic terrorists. You can learn more about the mission and work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ, become a member, and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Let's start taking some phone calls specifically on this Trump administration move through the Department of Labor to protect religious organizations, charities, schools, and entities from government discrimination. And yes, they're having to take this action in 2019. And yes, there will likely be a legal challenge because an atheist will say, well, I want to teach at that Christian school. And the school will say, well, that you disagree with the faith. I mean, you disagree with what you'll be teaching the kids. So even if you're qualified for every other purpose, we should not have to hire you or face a lawsuit from you because of that. And then second, and by the way, Supreme Court's been pretty clear on that. In the Hosanna Tabor case, it was 9-0. So the conservatives and liberals all agreed 9-0. But in furtherance of that, it's also to say that that same religious organization who makes a decision like that, if they're engaged in work helping the community, disaster relief, feeding the poor, and if there are federal funds available for that entity to apply for, that they can still apply for those funds even if they happen to be a religious entity. That's what this is all about. And it's very important for protecting religious liberty to the fullest extent of what the Constitution's all about. What our country's all about in the First Amendment is protecting religious liberty, the free exercise of religion. It puts some more meat on what that actually means. But let's go to the phones. Kay has been holding on from Maryland. Let's mark down Kay. She'll be one of the next, I think number six, who will get the next Red Wave when it releases next week. We'll get your address, Kay. Thanks for holding on. You're on the air.
Jordan, why does the president have to step in? Isn't EEOC the enforcement in this instance?
So here's, Harry, this is interesting. EEOC would be the enforcement of an employer-employee situation. The court's been pretty clear on that. But the EEOC would not have the role in the grant process, the federal funding process. So,
or the federal contracting.
Right, the contracting process. So to get the contract to do the disaster relief or the community outreach or the soup kitchen, anything that would be available to any other group similarly situated, you're not going to be barred because you happen to be a religious group who follows the tenets of your faith. So that's why it's not just the EEOC here. This is broader than just employment.
That is correct. So essentially, a religious organization would act as a supplier of a particular service required by the government. And the question then becomes, can that religious organization be barred from contracting with the federal government because it adheres to an employment policy that favors individuals, for instance, who actually adhere to the religious creed or beliefs enunciated by the organization. And so the Department of Labor, under Executive Order 11246, has promulgated rules and is now charged with the enforcement responsibility for ensuring free access to government contracting for religious organizations, religious employers, and the like. And so the EEOC perhaps could provide overall guidance to the federal government, and it is clear beyond question that Executive Order 11246 is grounded, at least in part, in the language of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, which was passed in the mid-60s.
And again, which included these exemptions, but there's been that ambiguity, which has made people, they feared, Andy, and I get this because we saw it from our Tea Party groups. We talked about that in the Red Wave. I mean, I think there's a real fear anytime if you are a nonprofit or a charitable organization, you've gotten that special tax-exempt status. Now, churches automatically get it, but other religious groups have got to apply for it. If you've gotten that, there's a real fear of then going back to the federal government and asking for anything, even if you are eligible for it, because of the existing kind of, it just wasn't clear. And then does that get you into a whole thing where they're going to end up stripping you of your tax-exempt status and destroying your group? That's what this is about correcting.
That's correct. That's the apprehension. The apprehension is if we do this, we're not going to have tax-exempt status, and then all our charitable and LA missionary work is going to go down the drain because it's not going to be permitted to be done. But religious groups need to be allowed to contribute without feeling coercion from the government and from someone who doesn't share their belief system. Let the government do its job and adapt to social changing conditions without religious conflict or dogmatism. Let the churches do their job without being corrupted by coming into contact with the coercive government. In other words, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, and unto God that which is God's, is enshrined in our Constitution. People need to remain and are freest as a result of that, and that's exactly what this rule is going to do. Religious organizations provide, there's no doubt about it, Jordan, the greatest predictors of philanthropic generosity and civic involvement. And if they're afraid to do that by contacting with the federal government, we are going to lose the most altruistic of people and the most conscientious of citizens to their secular counterparts who would not permit this to happen.
We're going to continue to take your phone calls on this, 1-800-684-3110. Then we're going to get into the Israeli elections as well. So if you've got questions about what is happening in Israel right now, and you will not believe, or maybe you will, what came out of the mouth of Congresswoman Ilhan Omar about Benjamin Netanyahu. Let's just say extinction was a word used to describe about Netanyahu by Ilhan Omar. We will play it for you. We have the audio for you. This is a day, again, where Israelis, though, are getting to choose who their next government will be. And again, they vote by party, not by individual. And then then a coalition government has to form within 30 days. So you'll find out a lot this afternoon when the polls close there at 3 p.m. Eastern time in the U.S., 10 p.m. in Israel. So we should know by tonight in America, likely, unless it's very, very close, who is going to get that first chance to form a government. That's the key. Who will get the first chance to form a coalition, a government? So we will talk about that and your questions about the Israeli election, but it's up to the Israeli people. And I will tell you, the top two leading candidates, I like Prime Minister Netanyahu a lot. I know he's got a great relationship with President Trump, and I think that plays into how a lot of Israelis are thinking about this, is that you've got a prime minister who gets along very well with the leader of the most powerful country in the world, who's done things like recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, recognize the Golan Heights as part of Israel. I mean, again, it's taken the step, move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. So that's playing into it. But I will tell you that the other major party involved here basically has the same political positions. It's kind of like a different personality. What they lack is the relationship with the current president. But that's not to say that that can't quickly be done. They are our ally. They get to choose. They are the only true democracy in the Middle East. They get to choose their leaders. We respect that as their ally, and we will work with their leaders. But I do think it's unique that Israel's gotten to a point where the two major kind of parties going for who will lead a coalition government are both parties on the right. One may be more to the right, Netanyahu's Likud, but the blue and white party is certainly not a middle of the road party. It's a maybe center right party. What's been interesting in Israel is the collapse of the left, the labor movement, which is historic there, the liberal parties, and they've collapsed actually because the young people are voting more and more conservative in Israel. So it's interesting. Again, you can see how closely we follow politics here. And I follow politics internationally as well, which is why I think, you know, writing a book about politics directly, you can trust me on a lot of this, folks, because I've been involved in it at the highest level. Senior advisors in presidential campaigns, worked on grassroots campaigns since I was out of college for the RNC, get out the vote drives, regional director. I've done the door-to-door. I've been just the head of three counties for the RNC in one state. Moving on up to then presidential campaigns and other campaigns as well, local as well. I really want you to pre-order. The book is out a week from today, The Next Red Wave, How Conservatives Can Beat Leftist Aggression, Rhino Betrayal, and Deep State Subversion, How We Can Win November 3rd, 2020, Election Day. Top down, local elections. Presidential elections, congressional elections. This is the guidebook. Pre-order it today. We really appreciate it because we want to get this to as many people as possible before Election Day. Get them educated on what they can do to ensure victory. We got to do everything we can, right? Go to thenextredwave.com. Pre-order the book today. It's released in 1 week. You can pre-order the hardback. You can pre-order the ebook for your e-reader. You can pre-order the audiobook. Just do it at thenextredwave.com, whether it's Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple for the audiobook, wherever you choose. Thenextredwave.com. We come back. We'll take your calls about what the Department of Labor has done and on the Israeli election. If you've got questions about that, 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Defending human life, standing up for our good friend Israel, working to uncover the deep state, the massive corruption in Washington, battling to end the genocide of Christians in many parts of the world, and a firm commitment to back constitutional efforts to protect our country from radical Islamic terrorists. You can learn more about the mission and work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ. Become a member and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org.
All right, you know what we do in the final segment, and I will talk about the next Red Wave at least one more time for you before we finish out the show today, because the book releases in just 1 week. We have seen great upticks in the numbers, and it's moving, and that's great, and that means people are responding who listen to this broadcast. We haven't really started promoting this outside of the broadcast, outside of our social media, and outside of the JSecuo Live broadcast. We will start next week. We'll do a lot more. You'll see me in a lot more media and other places talking about the book as well. We wanted to get in a significant amount of pre-orders from our core supporters, from those of you who listen to the broadcast or watch the broadcast on Facebook and Periscope, or listen on your radio station, whether it's a Christian radio station, conservative talk station, Sirius XM, Family Talk. And again, I encourage you to go to thenextredwave.com today. You'll see all the different places you can pre-order the book, and then click on the one you like the most, whether you're an Amazon Prime member, you like Barnes & Noble's e-reader, this or that, or go through Walmart, go through Apple for the audiobook. You could do that, again, at thenextredwave.com. Putting in that pre-order is so important, because the more pre-orders that come in, the more books get published, which means the more books that are available, you know, a week and a half, 2 weeks from now, so we can get this into the hands of more people who get prepared for victory. And we're going to have to fight really hard, as we say in the book, for victory in 2020. And Election Day is November 3rd, 2020. We've already had three Democrat presidential debates. So get pre-order your copy of The Next Red Wave today, and you'll get it next week, just 1 week from today. Let's go right to the phones. Let's go to Phil in California online too. Phil, welcome to JSecuo Live.
Thank you. My question is this. I know that most churches and religious organizations elect not to apply for government funds because of other qualifying regulations and other red tape oppose their beliefs. How will this new act with the Department of Labor affect organizations that would like to apply for funds?
Guys?
Well, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Eric.
Essentially, if the program involves government contracting, they can now apply to work with the government in an uninhibited manner. Why? Because the government has created rules and regulations which protect the religious independence of the organization. So going forward, to the extent that these rules, which are derived from Executive Order 11246, apply, to the extent that these rules apply, the religious organization should be able to freely contract with the government without fear that it will lose the right to enforce its religious heritage. And I think that is good news for all Americans. It's consistent with freedom of speech. It's consistent with the Free Exercise Clause, and it does not violate the Establishment Clause.
All right, folks, again, going to your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Before we do, Than, the proposed rule now, the comment period is over. Our comments from the ACLJ represent 13% of all comments that came in on this proposed rule from the entire country. That's 72,000 of you that signed on to our comment, and 4,300 of you who would, this all just happened in 1 week, used the database that our donors allow us to create, because we have to create this database where people can easily submit a comment online throughout an ACLJ database and know it gets there to the Department of Labor, to the right spot to comment on these federal rules. And Than, so now that the comment period has come to a close, how soon could this rule go into effect?
Well, they're going to review all of the comments. It'll probably be a couple of months, Jordan, before they're done with that process. But I was just going to say, I think it's hard to overstate the significance of our member engagement here. I think it's particularly important on these issues that maybe do get lost in some of the policy weeds. And I actually think there's a great tie to the book that you've just written, because I think a lot of times we think that grassroots activism ends at the ballot box. It certainly begins there, Jordan, but it continues when you exercise that right to petition the government on a rule, on a regulation, on a piece of legislation, and we want to help you make it easy. I mean, if you think about these numbers again, I know you gave them, Jordan, but I want people to hear these. 31,000 total comments received by the Department of Labor, more than twice that, Jordan. 72,000 signed our legal comment, and then almost 14% of those individual comments were made by ACLJ members. Jordan, I will tell you and I will tell listeners, what happens now is the Department of Labor, the ones who are finalizing these rules, literally take these comments and compare them side by side, say this many were positive, this many were negative, as they deliberate whether or not to make that final. So you've got to take that grassroots activism past the ballot box into these regulations. And look, we're going to continue to provide opportunities to people to do it. And if they want policies like this implemented, they've got to engage. That's why we give them the opportunity to.
Absolutely. Two more calls. We're going to Wendy and then Tracy. Both of you hold on. Wendy in California on line four. Wendy, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. I had a question about the freedom of association. Yep. Doesn't the Constitution state we have that right? Like the Christian school wants to have Christian teachers. Doesn't that cover them?
Absolutely. I mean, we have that right. Our First Amendment, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. It would be prohibiting the free exercise thereof if you couldn't decide who to employ at your religious school or religious organization. But also the freedom of speech, press, and the right to peaceably assemble is also important here. Remember in the Hosanna Tabor case versus EEOC, 9-0. The Supreme Court held that the Establishment and Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment bars suits brought on behalf of ministers against their churches claiming termination and violation of employment discrimination laws because the minister falls within what is called a ministerial exception. The First Amendment requires dismissal of this employment suit. That was 9-0 by the Supreme Court. Now this is being broadened out past just those who are in a ministerial role, those who would be working for the church's charity or religious charity as well. So that's why this rule is so important. Final call of the day, Tracy in Virginia on line one. Tracy, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Thank you so much. Two quick things. First of all, don't forget about Audible. Yep. I just pre-ordered on Audible. And number two, thank you for saying that the reason you want pre-orders is to get more books printed.
Yeah.
Because in my simple mind, it was all about money. So no, I was really good to hear that.
I will tell you something. As an author, as a first-time author, I could sell a lot of books. The pre-orders and the asking you to do it, it is not going to bring more money at all to me or to my co-author. So we got paid our fee to write the book. That's about it, the way that these contracts work. It's really, truly about, we do this. We do it as a labor of love. It's not about getting paid. It's about getting this information out. I think you brought up another way of doing it through those of you who have Audible subscriptions as well. And those of you who do understand what Tracy's talking about. But that's what I want to make clear. This is not about, we're going to make more money if people buy more books. And the way those contracts are written, that is, you can have a number one New York Times bestseller and not make a single extra dime off the books. But that doesn't matter to us. We want to get this into the hands of as many people as possible who agree with our positions and want to get more involved in the election. And we've got a big one coming up in 2020. I think it's one that the direction of our country is going to depend on it. Pre-order your copy of The Next Red Wave at thenextredwave.com. It's out next week.
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Become a member and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now aclj.org.